All right, this is Bio-231, and it's February 11th, day after your test. And we're going to continue on with the second chapter of Bones today, of axial skeleton. So you should know kind of in your mind what the difference is between the axial skeleton and appendicular skeleton. Before we start lecturing, just kind of think about that at the moment. Yeah, but I do have some comments on the test. Actually, just one kind of comment. A lot of people did really good. But I noticed that there was one bank of questions regarding, I believe it's figure 5.3. And that was the integument figure. And that was on the list to study. And I was wondering why so many people missed a few of those questions, like two or three of those questions. So I went back and I looked at the study guide. And I noticed that I didn't have that picture printed out for you in the study guide. It was listed as one that you should study, but it didn't have the picture for you to practice labeling on. All right, so what I decided to do is go back and regrade everybody's test, but I couldn't really decide what kind of credit I might give people. All right, so there were five questions associated with that figure right there. So I think I'm going to split the difference with you. I'm going to give you 2.5 points, all right? Because it was on the list, you should have studied it, but I left it off for you to practice. So I feel a little bad about that, but you guys got to let me know if there is something that you need to study that I've omitted from the study guide. So I'd be happy. We got to take a vote on this. So here we can be a little democratic, all right? So we'll take a vote. And I'll say, I'll give you 2.5 points on this test, all right, as long as you don't hold me responsible for leaving it off your figures, as long as I have it listed in the study guide. Whatever is in the study guide listed, you're responsible for. All right, if I, for whatever reason, I forget to give you the picture to study, you're still responsible for it from here on out if it's in the study guide. And if it's not, if I don't give you a picture, you got to let me know and I'll update the website, okay? Because I didn't know you didn't have a picture there. So let's raise your hand. Yeah, if you agree to that, raise your hand. All right. And okay, and then I'll count who doesn't agree to that. Not too many people. All right. As a matter of fact, it's unanimous. All right, so I got to recalculate everybody's grade. That's the reason why it's not on Blackboard, okay? So you're just going to have to wait a little bit longer, and there are a lot of students that had like 88.8 on the test, so that will boost you up into the A range. All right, but there were a lot of A's on the test anyway, which tells me you guys are using the study materials. So that's fantastic. That's all, basically all I had to say about that. Okay. All right, so I'll send everybody an email when I have the grades up. I'm not sure when that will be, probably by the weekend. All right, but that means I got to go back and grade everybody's test. All right, so does anybody have a question? Oh, here's somebody made a note about Wednesday's lab. Maybe in the schedule it says there was going to be a review, but as a matter of fact, you're going to press on and do lab number 5. So I'm sure what really helps in lab, just like in lecture, if you review the material before you go to lab, right? That will make your time in there a whole lot more efficient if you know what's happening. So prepare for lab number 5 for next Wednesday, okay, for lab. All right, so along those same lines, don't forget you have those pre-lecture reading assignments that you can do for this class, right? If you read ahead and understand a little bit about the material before I give a lecture, that helps you immensely in lecture. At least it would help me. So go ahead and look at those, and then, of course, magically the answer keys appear as well for that material. And I suppose that's something that I could just put on the test too, right? Because they're pretty good questions that are in that study guide. Okay. But I wouldn't use that pre-lecture study material the night before a test because it's actually kind of simple stuff, right? You should really do it before lecture. That's how it's designed to help you. So if you're using that to study for a test, I'm not sure that's really going to help you much for a test. All right, you should do it actually before lecture. That's the best way to do it. Okay. So, let me see if the door is locked or not locked. Hi. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. All right, so axial skeleton. Tell me what the axial skeleton is again. Bones of skull, okay, thoracic cage, and vertebrae. Okay, that's the axial skeleton. And we talked about how we go about naming various landmarks on bones. You do have to learn a lot of landmarks in this class. Maybe if you took, for instance, like Bio 160 or something, you learned a lot of bones, but you didn't really have to learn a lot of landmarks. So make sure you know the names of the different processes or the names of different depressions or what we call a hole in a bone. And, of course, then you should also know the function. What's the general function of a process? Muscle attachment. Just automatically say muscle attachment without thinking. All right, and fossa. What's the function of a fossa? It holds something. What about a foramen? The function. I want to know the function, not just a description. It's a passageway for something, right? It is a hole in a bone, but it's a passageway. Okay, so we're going to be using that terminology. So let's start with the axial skeleton. Notice that I have some numbers associated with some bones, like the skull bone, like the skull has 28 bones in it. I'm not going to ask you how many bones are in the skull. That just kind of gives you ballpark feeling about how many there are. There are some that are singular. There are some that are paired. All right, so if you know one on one side, you know the name of the bone on the other. You don't have to know 28 different bones in the skull. It's not too bad. There's one hyoid bone, there's 26 bones in the vertebral column, and 25 that make up the thoracic cage. And what we're going to start studying next week is the appendicular skeleton, right? That includes the upper appendage, lower appendage, as well as the girdles. These are bones that hold the appendages to the axial skeleton. Yeah. You have to know all the bones. Except for carpals and tarsals. And I'll show you where those are next week. Right? You might have to know a couple, but not all of them. All right, so, but all of these you have to know in the axial skeleton. Every single one in the axial skeleton you have to know, plus parts of these bones. Okay, so the skull, all right, makes up the bones of the head, and we can classify all the bones in the head into two categories. There are bones that we call facial bones, and what do they make? What do they make up? Your face. Yeah, they make up bones of your face, like your cheek and your chin, right, your nose, things like that. And then there are cranial bones, right? And cranial bones make up the brain case. Those are bones that are holding that brain in position and keeping it from rattling around in there, okay, and protecting the brain. So the cranial bones are the parietal, temporal, ethmoid, occipital, sphenoid, and frontal bone. Most of these are really big, and guess what? I'll highlight that one right there. What's that one? Oh, you're not reading my mind yet this morning. That's my favorite bone, okay? And I'll tell you why that's my favorite bone. A lot of people just kind of skip over this one, but it's really important. So when we take a look at it, I'll tell you why. All right? So the ethmoid, one of the functions of the ethmoid, because it's a cranial bone, is what? What's one of the functions of the ethmoid bone? The ethmoid bone, because it's a cranial bone, it helps hold your brain in place, right? Because it helps make up the cranial vault. So that's one of the obvious things that the ethmoid bone does. It holds your brain in place because it makes up the cranial vault. All right, the other facial bones are the vomer, nasal, mandible, zygomatic, palatine, lacrimal, and maxilla. We'll see where all of these are. The smallest bone in the skull is the lacrimal bone. That's the smallest one, and the lacrimal, you probably haven't run into this yet, but there's a gland that secretes tears. And it's called the lacrimal gland. It's not really called the tear gland, but when you cry, that lacrimal gland secretes tears. And that gland it has an association with that tiny, tiny bone called the lacrimal gland that's on the inside of your orbit right here. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know if I'd really try to poke around to find it right there because it's so thin, it actually fractures pretty easily. Okay. All right, so let's take a look. Before I show you some stuff, there are six auditory ossicles, and you should find these in lab. I don't have specimens here to show you. I might have a picture of them, but it's going to be misleading. As a matter of fact, I could just kind of pull your leg and say, well, you know, I have all six auditory ossicles right here between my fingers. and could you see those auditory ossicles between my fingers? You would say, no. You know, but even if I did have them between my fingers, they're so small you couldn't see them anyway. Right? They would be completely covered by my fingertips. And the auditory ossicles, by that name right there, you should have a feeling, what kind of function are they involved with? Hearing, right? When you hear auditory, you should think of hearing. And they're actually completely encased within the temporal bone. All right, and I'll show you where they exist. But these are important little bones for hearing. Inside the temporal bone, you have three on each side, right? Three in the right temporal and three in the left temporal bone. And they're named the malleus, incus, and stapes. So when we get to the senses chapter, we're going to pay particular attention to the auditory ossicles, but you should know that they're in that temporal bone. Okay, some other bones, the hyoid bone, sort of looks like the mandible. It's a horseshoe-shaped bone, but it is inserted in deep within the mandible. We don't ever see it. It's surrounded by a number of very strong muscles that you need for articulation and for breathing and for chewing and swallowing. Typically we don't really see that bone very much. Right, but if someone's going into speech therapy or something, then you might want to be really interested in that bone and all the muscles associated with that bone.
Isn't that the hardest one to break?
The hyoid bone is actually, it's maybe a little bit difficult to break because it's protected by a lot of muscle, but if you're horsing around with somebody, like playing monster, and they're choking you,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
you could break.
I know you.
Yeah, so choking will break that bone pretty easily. So again, that's one I wouldn't really palpate very hard to find, because there's going to be a lot of muscles that you'll feel and they'll tense up, and if you push hard enough to feel that hyoid bone, you might actually break it. Okay, so I wouldn't mess around with that one or the lacrimal bone. So it always breaks when somebody's strangled.
What happens when it breaks?
Usually what causing it to break will suffocate you and you'll die. Okay, so I wouldn't mess around with that one. Okay, then we have some cavities. These are big spaces inside, some bones. They could be cranial bones, they could be facial bones. We'll take a look at these. All right, so let's start taking a look at some pictures to see these things. All right, so here is an anterior view of the skull, and of course we see some facial bones as well as cranial bones. So let's start with some cranial bones, because that was first on your list. All right. Now, when we start to learn bones, spend a lot of time and learn bones really, really well, because when you know the names of bones, you're going to learn the names of nerves and arteries and veins and many other kinds of structures that are named by the bone that they're associated with or passed through. All right? So, for instance, this big bone in the front, this big bony plate in the top of our skull, it's one of the cranial bones. It protects a particular lobe of the brain. And maybe you don't even know that the brain has different lobes to it, but we'll study the different structures of the brain. And guess what the name of that lobe of the brain is right here in the... That's the frontal lobe, right? So learn your bones really well, and everything else you won't even have to study hardly any for the rest of the class, okay? All right, so here's the frontal bone. Behind the frontal bone is parietal. And the frontal bone is just a singular bone. The parietal bone is paired. You have one on either side. All right, then we have the nasal bone, which makes the bridge of the nose. Your cheekbone right here is called the zygomatic bone. And you can see that the zygomatic as well as the frontal help make up the orbit. That's the socket for your eye. And then the inferior orbit bone is the maxilla, right over here. So the maxilla is also your upper jaw bone, because you can see teeth inserted into the maxilla. And that's a bilateral bone here and here. All right, and then your lower jaw bone is the mandible. So mandible, maxilla, zygomatic, frontal, nasal. And we see that there are some structures inside the nasal cavity. The nasal cavity, you can see, is made partly by the nasal bones, as well as the maxilla right here, but there are some other bones deep inside the nasal cavity. And one little bone right over here that makes the inferior part of the nasal septum, And a septum is a structure that separates a cavity into usually a right and left part. All right, so we're nicely bilateral organisms, so your nasal cavity is separated into a right nasal cavity and left nasal cavity by the what? Nasal septum right here. And does that look like a big thick bone? No, that's a tiny thin bone, right? And it can be damaged, it can be broken, and we would call that a deviated nasal septum, as a matter of fact. And the reason why you have these structures inside your nose right here are couple-fold. One is to produce a nice flow of air through your nose so that you can breathe, right? So if the structure of these bones changes or gets broken or gets mangled in there, what about that airflow through your nose? It's difficult. It gets impeded, right? So when you change structure, you always change function, right? So there's a structural functional relationship right there. Yeah.
I have a question. Inside the nose, that outside the
skull,
is that cartilage?
Oh, we do have cartilage. Cartilage is part of the skeletal system, but I don't have it on these slides to show you right now. We have some pictures of the nasal cartilages in your textbook. You could learn those, but you're not going to be tested on them. Okay. And in lab, I don't think we have any skulls with cartilage because it's soft tissue. It degrades and gets nasty, so we just have plastic bones or real bones in lab for you to look at. All right, so you also see some other structures, like little shelves inside the nasal cavity right there. Those are what we call nasal conchae, and they're shelves filled with mucous membranes. And the nasal septum does a similar kind of job. When we inhale, those mucous membranes humidify the air, because if you're out in the desert someplace and just breathe in very, very dry air, that's going to turn your lungs into potato chips, right? It's going to dry your lungs out. So these nasal conchae help humidify the air. Also, if the air is really cold, guess what these nasal conchae do? They warm the air up. So they humidify the air. If it's too dry, they warm the air up. If it's too cold, and also if it's too hot, what do to the air? It can cool the air down. Exactly right. Now, for instance, if you're in a burning building or something and you breathe superheated gas, of course those nasal conchae will get burned up and your lungs will burn up too. But within certain normal limits, right, they help protect your lungs. So humidification and temperature regulation. Okay. All right, so the bottom bone of the nasal septum is what we call the vomer, and it's kind of triangular shaped down over in this region, but it also acts like a nice flat blade in the inferior part of the nasal septum. The superior part of the nasal septum is a different bone. It's called the ethmoid bone. So there we see that ethmoid bone again. Not only does it hold your brain in place, but it allows you to breathe normally so that you have good airflow through your nose. And when it gets broken, then that has to be fixed so that you can breathe. All right, so that's another function of the ethmoid bone right here. Let's see, what are some other bones that we see? Now, can you see the color of this one right here and right here? What does that look like? Pink. Ah, okay. All right, and do you see a little pink over here? Okay. Little pink here, some pink here, and what about right here? Is that pink? Okay. That's all the same bone. That's pretty amazing bone. It's really easy to visualize. That's called the sphenoid bone. And you can see that it makes up part of the cranial vault as well. It goes all the way from the right side to the left side of your skull, and it also makes up the posterior aspect of the orbit as well. The posterior wall of the eye socket right here. That's a sphenoid. And right smack in the middle, right above the roof of your mouth, right at about this location within the sphenoid bone, is a little depression, which we call the turcica cella. And the turcica cella is a place where the pituitary gland resides and is protected by the sphenoid bone. So that's an important landmark that you should be familiar with as well. All right, so what are some other landmarks? This probably is an exam figure for you. There here is the mental foramen, because this is the mental part of the mandible. All right, so what's this function of a foramen again? It's a? No, it's not. What's the function? A hole is how we talk about the structure, but what kind of function?
Passageway.
Yeah, just say passageway right away. So nerves and vessels pass through this particular foramen right here. Okay, here's another
Foramen. Infraorbital foramen. Is that really hard to remember that one? No, because it's below the orbit, right? So infraorbital foramen, that's another passageway for nerves and blood vessels. All right, here's the supraorbital foramen. Sometimes it's just a notch in some people. Okay, and again, that's another passageway. All right, so those I think are pretty much the things I want to show you on this illustration. Okay, but I tell you what, there's a couple other things. All right, so a person's eyeball will be in the orbit right here. So there has to be ways for blood vessels as well as nerves to get to and from the eyeball. And we can see some of those passageways here. Here is a long foramen, right? So that's what we call a fissure. This is the inferior orbital foramen. And here is the superior orbital foramen right here. Those are pretty easy to see if you look at a skull in the lab. And that's easy to remember, inferior, superior orbital foramen. You know, go ahead on your practicum, say fissure. All right, but a fissure is a special case of a foramen. All right, let's look at the posterior skull. All right, so remember the parietal bones are posterior to the frontal bone. They're paired. So these are the parietal bones. Here is the occipital bone. Guess what the name of the lobe of the brain is back over here? That's the occipital lobe. Right? So again, know the names of your bones, that will help you. Guess what the name of the lobe of the brain is over here? Yeah, parietal. You have two parietal lobes, okay, and you actually have two occipital lobes as well. Okay, then you have some other features. These lines right here, these are processes. Right? These are processes, although, all right, we call that lines because a line is a long, elongated process and it's rough. What's the function of these nuchal lines, the superior nuchal line, because it's a process. What's the function of a process? Automatically, you should just say muscle attachment, right? So there are muscles there that help move your head or stabilize your head. So when we start looking at muscles, we'll be using some of these landmarks on the bone. Okay? Okay, occipital bone. On this diagram right here, we see some joints. Right, so here's a joint between the occipital bone. Oh, maybe I'll have to go back to the previous slide. Here's a joint between the occipital bone and parietal bone. This is what we call the lambdoidal suture. Lambdoidal suture. And here is a suture between the parietal bones. That's the sagittal suture. And then every once in a while, notice that these joints are highly irregular. They kind of, what do they remind you of? A zigzag, yeah. It's a very convoluted, means it has a lot of twists and turns. But it kind of reminds me of like a worm or something like that. All right? And these are very solid joints in an adult. And every once in a while, because of the way this joint forms, you might have a little bone between the parietal and the occipital bone. All right? Just because of the way the suture forms. And as a matter of fact, here's one right here. Kind of looks like a little island right within that suture. Sometimes that's called a sutural bone. Other times it's called a wormian bone. Right? Okay. Let's go back to the previous slide and take a look. Do I see any sutures here? None that you have to know. Okay. None that you have to know. Okay. So here is... So again, what's the function of a process? Muscle attachment, okay? Now I'm going to tell you a couple exceptions to that rule, okay? So a process is just a raised bony prominence coming off of a bone. It could be a pointy prominence. And here is the maxilla, right here. That's your upper jawbone. And notice that here is a point that's sticking up and it's articulating with the frontal bone, right? And here's a suture between the zygomatic and the maxilla. So here is another process that's articulating with the zygomatic bone. All right, so what did we call the name of this bone right here? This is the maxilla. And the way that we name these different processes is by convention so that it's easy to remember what they're called. So this is the maxilla. This process that's reaching superior and articulating with the frontal bone, we call this the frontal process of the maxilla. So that's the frontal process. Doesn't mean it's in the front. It means that it's articulating with the frontal bone. All right, and here is another process of the, what bone is this right here? That's the maxilla, and can you see this this process right here? What bone is it articulating with? The zygomatic bone. So this right here is what we call the zygomatic process of the maxilla, so we know exactly where it is. All right, so the convention is pretty easy. You might not see it just yet, but after I tell you a couple times, I think you'll be able to picture what I'm talking about. And so as a matter of fact, let's jump to a different bone and see. So here is the zygomatic bone, right? Okay. And the zygomatic bone has a process right here. And it's articulating with the maxilla. So how would you name this process of the zygomatic bone? This is the maxillary process of the zygomatic bone. Okay, so there's a nice symmetry there. Okay, let's go to another couple slides. All right, for sure this is another exam figure. This shows a lot of nice detail. All right, and so what do we got? We got the mandible, okay, maxilla. Here's that zygomatic bone. And here is the zygomatic bone, and you can see it reaching up and touching the frontal bone. What would you call this process of the zygomatic bone? That's the... Okay, yeah, I would say it's the frontal process of the zygomatic bone. Okay, yeah, you had a little bit backwards, but that's okay. Why don't you say it a couple times? Because this process is reaching up and touching the frontal bone, right? So this is the frontal process of the zygomatic bone. All right, now what else can we see? Here's the maxilla, nasal bone. Here's that little lacrimal bone right here, little lacrimal bone. Here's a little lacrimal fossa that's a tear duct. Where do some of the tears end up, for instance, when you're crying? Where do they go? Okay, yeah, they lubricate the eyeball. But after they're done in the eyeball, sometimes they roll down your face. But where else do they go? Does anybody have a recollection? They go, yeah, they go on your nose. You get a runny nose, too, right? Because there is a passageway between your orbit and your nose that goes through the lacrimal bone. Right, and so that's what we call the, it goes right through the lacrimal fossa right here. The fossa is a depression, but there's also a foramen in there. All right, so here is that bone that goes all the way from the right to the left side of the head. That's the sphenoid bone. And one bone that we haven't mentioned yet is the temporal bone. A lot of nice information associated with the temporal bone. It's a paired bone. There is a big hole right here, passageway, that allows sound energy to enter your ear so that you can hear. We call this the external auditory meatus. So this is important, or functions in hearing. It doesn't go all the way through to your brain because the hearing apparatus is deep within inside the temporal bone. So you don't have a hole that goes all the way to your brain. It stops midway through. This part of the temporal bone is very, very flat. What's a word that we use for flat? Squamous. So that's the squamous region of the temporal bone because it's flat. Take a look at it in lab. We also see some sutures. All right, so here is, since this is the flat part of the temporal bone, this is the squamous suture. All right, and this, if we look at this suture right here, that's a coronal suture. If you were to draw a plane on somebody's head, separating an anterior-posterior part of their cranium. It could be outlined very nicely with this suture right here. So that's the coronal suture, squamous suture, lambdoidal suture, and this is what we call the occipital mastoid suture because this area right here is the mastoid region of the temporal bone. And you can see there is a big bony prominence right here. And if you palpate this in lab, you'll see that it's very, very rough. So what's the function of that mastoid process of the temporal bone? It's going to be for muscle attachment. So there are some very strong muscles that attach to the head right there. And guess what they allow your head to do? Okay, it can either give you a yes motion or even turn your head from side to side. All right, so that's a very important attachment point. Mastoid process is really big. And notice, here is another process that's sticking down right here, but it's not massive. It's tiny. It's very long and narrow. So what do we call a very narrow and long process? Typically, we call that a spine, right? So that is the styloid process, because it looks like a pen or a stylus that you would write with. Okay. Another process on the temporal bone is this right here. All right, we can't really appreciate this, but this forms an arch that goes from the zygomatic bone to the temporal bone, and there are big, strong muscles that go underneath the arch. Part of the mandible is underneath the arch right here. So here is a process. So what bone is, where do I have the cursor right now? What bone is that? What bone? Tell me just the name of the bone. That's the temporal bone. That's the temporal bone, right? Because it should be color-coded for you guys, right? So temporal bone. But now, how would we name that process? It's touching the zygomatic bone, so we would call that the zygomatic process of the temporal bone. And if we go across this suture right here, we see the zygomatic bone, but here's a process. Go ahead and name that process right there. That's the temporal process of the zygomatic bone. Okay. Now, there was an edition of the book where they had it backwards, and half the books had it right, half the books had it wrong. I think they got it all correct in the current edition that you have. All right, so make sure that you know that when you name a process, you name it by the bone it articulates with, not the name of the bone that it actually exists on. Right? See what I'm saying? If not, maybe see me after class and we can go over that again a little bit. All right, the mandible. So here's that mental foramen again. All right, so here is the body of the mandible. Here's the mandibular angle, because it makes a nice angle right here. This is the coronoid process. It's kind of a sharp, bony process right here. What's the function of this coronoid process? Muscle attachment. Just say muscle attachment. And then this right here is the mandibular condyle. And a function of the condyle is, it's a process, but it's not rough. It's a smooth process. So it's for articulation. It helps form a joint. And so the name of this joint, maybe you've heard of before, but now you know why it was named. It's called the temporomandibular joint. Remember, we can take two different names in anatomy, put them together as long as we put an O between them, like temporomandibular joint. We're talking about the temporal bone and the mandible. This is the joint right here. And some people have some difficulty with that joint because it's pretty complicated. All right, it can elevate and depress the mandible. It can protract and retract, and it can even move the mandible from side to side for grinding. So it's a pretty complicated joint, and when it gets injured, it can cause problems for people. And probably the best person to talk to about damage to this joint here would be your dentist, for instance, would know a lot about that particular joint.
What was the function of that joint?
Chewing. Well, the functions, we're going to look at motions of bones when we get to muscles, but when you stick your jaw, don't do this, don't chip your tooth, but when you poke your jaw straight out, that's called protraction, and when you bring your jaw straight in, that's retraction. I can't do that when I'm talking because I'll chip a tooth, but you can go like, or that, protraction, retraction. Depression is what? And then elevation is closing your mouth. But you can, it's all motion in the so instead of saying temporomandibular joint, how do most people say the name of that joint? Yeah, they just say TMJ, right? Temporomandibular. It's a whole lot easier to say. In lab, I don't know what your lab instructor will let you get away with, right? Okay, so that's a pretty complicated joint right there. What else do I want to say? Oh, what's this right here? Infraorbital foramen. Well, here's a little bit of that ethmoid bone again. Okay. And make sure you know all the sutures. All right. Now, here we see some teeth. All right. And so a tooth, as it's inserted into the mandible or the maxilla right here, there's a hole in these bones, and that's called an alveolus. Alveolus is a hole that the root of the tooth is joining the mandible or maxilla with. And so you can see the edge of that socket, and that's called the alveolar margin. Alveolar margin, that's just the edge of the alveolus. And then you can actually see some other processes between the teeth. See this little pointed region right here? That's called an alveolar process. Alveolar process, because it's a process that's helping hold teeth in. This is another exception to the rule where a process is always used for muscle attachment. This process is not used for muscle attachment. What's it used to holding? It's used to hold your teeth in position. So there's a ligament that holds the tooth to the mandible right here, completely surrounds the root of the tooth. That's what we call the periodontal ligament. And if you ever chew on something and all of a sudden you bite on something that you didn't think was in there, like there was a little grain of sand in something that you were eating, and you feel a sharp pain in your tooth, that's because you've stretched that ligament, the periodontal ligament in the alveolus. Yeah. Oh, yeah, who's got a piece of paper? Anybody have a blank piece of paper for sign-in sheet? Yeah, okay. Just put the date on there for me. Yeah, that's the hole that the root of the tooth actually fits in. Yeah.
I mean, if the teeth are hole into the mental foramen, and we call it the alveolar margin and the alveolar.
No, your teeth are held into the alveoli of the mandible.
So how can they move with breaks and they get like
whole time? Oh, because they're not glued in. They're held in there by ligaments, which you can't stretch over time.
Oh.
Yeah. Because bones, your whole body is changing all the time. Your bones are not like this concrete pillar, that once you build that concrete pillar, it's there for years and years and years. But I think I told you, how long do you have a bone for? Only 5 years, right? So every 5 years, your skeleton completely rebuilds itself. So if all of a sudden you start pushing or pulling in the same direction after 5 years, what's going to happen to that bone? It's going to move, yeah, or it's going to somehow adjust to that pressure. So your body is very dynamic. So braces will move teeth around, and you'll also rebuild the mandible as well. And that's one problem sometimes people face when a tooth is extracted for whatever reason. Maybe it becomes damaged, and the mandible right here doesn't have any stress applied on it because that tooth is gone. Guess what happens to the bone in the mandible in this region? If all of a sudden it has an easy job, it's not experiencing any stress, guess what happens to that bone? Yeah, it dissolves away. All right, so that's one of the problems of tooth extraction, that it changes facial structures. And that's an I can talk to you about some dental applications later. But your bone is always responding. There's a new treatment to prevent bone loss in the mandible and maxilla. And it's called a transplant. Now they'd like to transplant teeth to preserve bone density in different parts of your face. Okay. Okay, oh, here, the ramus. Here's the ramus of the mandible, right? So here's the body, here's the angle, here's the ramus. All right. Let me see. Okay, so let's look at a nice sagittal section of the brain and see if we can understand some of these bones. So here is the frontal bone, parietal bone, occipital bone, and then the lateral part of the cranial vault right here is temporal bone. And then here is the mandible. Right here is the maxilla, okay, nasal bone. All right, since we have an inside look of the mandible right here, there's another foramen. Here's the mandibular foramen. What did we call the foramen that's in the very anterior part of the mandible? That was the mental foramen, right? So, but this is the mandibular foramen on the medial side of the mandibular ramus. That's how you would talk about that. Right? And of course, people that are involved in dentistry are very interested in this one because guess what's going through there? Yeah, that's where the nerves are, right? For that innervate the mandible, and of course you'd like those nerves to be anesthetized when you have dental work. So that's one of the nerves that has to be anesthetized. Okay, here is the roof of the mouth. Sometimes we call this the hard palate. We can see the anterior portion is made by the maxilla, but the posterior part is made up of another little bone. That's the palatine bone. So the roof of the mouth has two parts to it, the maxilla as well as the palatine. And you like these two bones right here. Are they your favorite bones? They could be, Because what do they allow you to do? They allow you to eat, right? Because if they're malformed when you eat or chew something, where's the food going to go if they're not formed properly? They're going to go up into your nasal cavity. Okay, so that's a really big mess. Okay, so we definitely like to repair that in people that have that kind of defect. We call that a cleft palate in people. All right, yeah.
I mean, even if you have like, you don't have that bone, you still have like the inner palate.
Not necessarily. There could be a hole. There could be a patent pathway right between the oral cavity and the nasal cavity. Yeah, that makes somebody really miserable. That should be repaired. Okay, so the hard palate is the maxilla. Now, let's name this process. What bone do I have the cursor on right now? Okay, oh, but no, tell me the name of the bone right here. Not the process, but the name of the bone is the maxilla, but it is touching the palatine, so we name the process right here. This is the palatine process of the maxilla, right? So again, we name it by what it articulates with. This we just call the horizontal plate of the palatine bone. We don't call it the maxillary process. All right, here is another view of the vomer. What does the vomer help make up? The septum, nasal septum, the inferior part of the nasal septum, and the superior part is the ethmoid bone. All right, so that's the ethmoid bone right here. All right, now you see some big holes right here. What bone is this hole in? Frontal bone. And these holes are what we call the paranasal sinuses. And so that's the frontal paranasal sinus. Here is one that's in the sphenoid bone. Remember, the sphenoid goes all the way from the right to the left side of your cranium. There are holes in here, so these are what we call the sphenoid sinuses or paranasal sinuses. And there are passageways. There's a foramen between the nasal cavity and these sinuses. And these sinuses are filled with lymphatic tissue, and lymphatic tissue helps fight infection. Because every time you inhale air, guess what's coming in with that air that you're breathing in? All kinds of germs, that's right. Bacteria, fungus, molds, viruses, right? So those nasal sinuses help fight those infections. And of course, when you have a cold, they get inflamed, right? And they secrete a lot of mucus, which then, of course, runs down into your nose. So these are important lymphatic structures that help fight infection. The other nice thing is, if they were solid bone, your head would be a lot heavier, and you could move your head around, right? So this helps make bones lighter, the paranasal sinuses. All right, so that's a pretty good discussion of this bone. Okay, here is an inferior look of the cranium. I'm not going to go over this one very much, except here you can see the palatine processes of the maxilla. Here are the palatine bones. Here's a little bit of the vomer right here. And we can see the temporal bone here and here. Occipital bone. Now the occipital bone, I guess I'll mention a few things, I guess. The occipital bone has this extremely large hole. All right, what's a general name for a hole in a bone? It's a foramen. And this is about the biggest hole in a bone anywhere in your body, so we're going to call that the foramen grande. But we don't call it that, we call it magnum. Okay, I don't know why Latin went out there, Greek went out, so it's called foramen magnum. All right, that's the biggest hole. Now, what's a passageway for? That's for the spinal cord. That's how the spinal cord gets up to the brainstem. So right here is a line of demarcation between the spinal cord, which is in your vertebral column, and your brain, which is in the cranial vault, right here at the foramen magnum. All right, now here is... All right, so here is the zygomatic arch, right? That's made up of the temporal process of the zygomatic bone and the zygomatic process of the temporal bone. All right, so are you getting a feel for how we name these processes again? All right, once you get it down, it'll be really easy to do. And I think that's all I'm going to show you. In lab, you might have to know all of these different foramina. In lecture, you will, but not from this aspect, all right? But on this aspect, this is the exam figure, all right? So this is the aspect that I want you to know, all the different foramina. All right, so here's a cranial vault. What you can't appreciate very well, at least from where I'm standing, is that there are three main depressions in the brain. So there is like one bowl right here, there's another one that's kind of going right through the middle, and then there's a deep depression over here. This is what we call the three fossa of the brain. So this would be the anterior cranial fossa, this is the middle cranial fossa, and the posterior cranial fossa. So what lobe of the brain is in the posterior cranial fossa? The occipital lobe is right there. Yeah. Okay, so that you're learning some neuroanatomy today too. So now here you can see the a nice illustration of the sphenoid bone, right? The sphenoid bone. And here's the sella turcica. What do we find in the sella turcica? That's the pituitary gland. Fits right in this divot right here. All right, now this one right here. That's my favorite bone, which is? Ethmoid bone. Yeah, ethmoid bone, ethmoid. Okay, so what did we say the ethmoid bone does? The first thing, it holds your brain in place. Okay, second thing, makes your nasal septum, so it allows you to breathe easy, right? All right, now here we see, look at all these little holes right here in the ethmoid bone. They're there because they are what? They are, what's the function of these holes? What's the function of any kind of hole? The function of any kind of hole is? Passageway. So there are things going through all these holes, in particular olfactory nerves. Right? Olfactory nerves, well, what's the sense of olfaction? Olfaction is smell, right? So those are nerves that go into your nasal cavity so that you can smell things. So the ethmoid bone is important because it holds your brain in place, makes your nasal septum, allows you to smell things, right? Because of these olfactory nerves. And this bony plate right here that the olfactory foramina are in is called the cribriform plate. All right, so olfactory foramina are in the cribriform plate. And then there's another structure, which we can't see, but it kind of looks like a line on this diagram. If we were to move the picture, right, to where, if we were to stand it up on end and then rotate it, it would look like a shark's fin sticking up. All right, so there's this bone that's sticking way up into the between the frontal lobes, and that's what we call the crista galli. So that crista galli grabs onto a membrane that surrounds the brain, and that's really one of the major things that holds your brain in place, is that little crista galli right there. Okay, so that's a couple more things with this ethmoid bone. So is this the anterior or posterior part of your skull? Anterior, right? So that's the anterior part, right? Or ventral part. Here's the posterior part because you here see the occipital lobe. Okay. Well, okay. What else do I want to show you? Well, here's the temporal bone. Remember that big hole in the temporal bone? What do we call on the lateral aspect of the temporal bone? External auditory meatus, that's important for sound energy to enter your hearing apparatus. And then there are some nerves that come from your hearing apparatus to your brain. And they exit through this internal acoustic meatus right here. So this internal acoustic meatus is going to be directly opposite the external acoustic meatus, but of course they're not connected because in this region right here, you have all of the apparatus for hearing and some for equilibrium as well. So it's not a hole going all the way through. This region right in here is where those auditory ossicles are. So it's a pretty complicated region. And so we give it a name. We call it the petrous region of the temporal bone. And when you look at that in lab, you'll see that it's a big ridge that goes from the internal acoustic meatus to this middle cranial fossa over here. All right, so that's one way you can find out what this is, because right on the other side, on the exterior, is going to be what? A nice landmark called the external acoustic meatus, and if you want to say external auditory meatus, that's fine. That should be fine with your lab instructors as well. Okay. All right, so here you can see the different cranial fossa. All right, now we have some bones, disarticulated bones. And I ask your lab instructors to make sure you know these disarticulated bones as well. And they're exam figures, so you should be able to pick out what these bones are by their shape, even when they're not inside the skull. So this one right here, you see the external acoustic meatus, the styloid process, mastoid process. All right, so that's the temporal bone, right? And then you can see what else? The zygomatic process of the temporal bone, because what bone is that articulating with? The zygomatic bone, right? So hence the zygomatic process of the temporal bone. All right, and that's kind of what it looks like, disarticulated. Now here is the bone that goes all the way across from the right to the left side of the cranium, and this is the sphenoid bone. This is a very easy bone to recognize, because how would you describe that shape to somebody? It kind of looks like a bat or a butterfly, right? So it's very easy to recognize. So there are wings. We call this the greater wing, right here and right here, of the sphenoid bone. And then the sella turcica is right here. That's a depression. And then this is the major part of the sphenoid bone that's called the body of the sphenoid bone. And deep to the sella turcica and the body is that cavity. What do we call that cavity that's in that part? That's called the sphenoid sinus. Right? So it's just a big empty cavity in a healthy person if you don't have a cold, if it's all plugged up with something. So I think those are the things that you want to see. Oh, greater wing and the lesser wing right here. A canal is a foramen, but it's an elongated hole going through a bone. It's very long. All right, so guess what goes through the optic canal? The optic nerve for vision. Right, so the optic canal is right here. Okay, I'm going to show you, I don't know about today, but I'll show you how to name these different foramina. Maybe if we have time before you go, I'll show you how to do that. Okay, next bone. Ah, that's still the sphenoid bone, because we can see the greater wing right here, the lesser wing, here's the body. But there are a couple of bony plates that project inferiorly, all right, from the cranium down to where your throat is. And so here, these are processes. We call this the pterygoid process. We don't pronounce the P. So what's the function of these pterygoid processes right here? Muscle attachment. Okay. And guess what the name of the muscle is that attach to these processes? They're the pterygoid muscles. All right. So again, just by knowing the parts of bones, you start practicing automatically for what? Your neuroanatomy and muscle anatomy automatically. And these muscles are very important for chewing. Okay, the pterygoid muscles. So when you kind of see that's one less thing that you have to memorize when we get into actions of muscles, because it's going to be associated with your mandible. Okay, so sphenoid bone. That's just a radiograph of what the sphenoid bone looks like. Ah, what's this one here? Oh, yeah, but what did I tell you? My favorite bone. Yeah, you could just say, well, your favorite bone. That would work for me. Okay, but in lab, you probably can't put that on the practicum. This is that ethmoid bone. Why? Because. Yeah, because the lab instructor probably doesn't know that's my favorite bone. Okay. So you have to say ethmoid. So here is the perpendicular plate of the ethmoid that makes up the nasal septum, right? The nasal septum. And then here's the crista galli, which is poking up into the anterior cranial vault that anchors the membranes of the brain, which we call the meninges. So your brain doesn't slosh around in there. It's fixed very nicely. The cribriform plate we can't see, but it because this is an anterior view of the ethmoid bone. But if we were to look from on top and look down, what would we see through this cribriform plate? If we were to get on top of the ethmoid bone and look down into the nasal cavity, we would see the olfactory foramina, right, in the cribriform plate of the ethmoid bone. And then the last thing that I notice about the ethmoid bone right here is look at all these holes. What do we call holes in these cranial bones? Those are a foramen is a passageway for something, but these are not passageways. They're completely surrounded. They are sinuses, paranasal sinuses They're filled with lymphatic tissue, which then helps fight infection. So the ethmoid bone does what? Holds your brain in place. Allows you to breathe properly. Allows you to smell things, and it keeps you healthy. Keeps you from having infections. So that's a pretty important bone. Okay, and as a matter of fact, sometimes when somebody has a chronically infected sinus infection, anybody ever have a chronic, you don't have to, yeah, you didn't have to admit that, but anyway, that's nice. Okay, if you have a chronically infected sinus, sometimes it's very hard to clear up, and they actually have to go into these sinuses and clear them up and remove some of the bone, not just of the ethmoid sinus, but maybe the frontal sinus or the maxillary sinus as well. Okay, and that helps out quite a bit. Okay. Doesn't feel like it will, but after a couple weeks, you'll be glad that you did that. Okay. So, ethmoid bone. And the reason why they call it the ethmoid bone is because if we rotate it counterclockwise, what does it look like? It looks like an E. Kinda. You have to use a little imagination maybe to see it, but it looks like an E for ethmoid bone. All right, mandible. What do we have to know about the mandible? Well, the body of the mandible, this is the mental region. So here's the mental foramen, the angle, the ramus, right, the coronoid process and the mandibular condyle. And then this notch between the coronoid process and the mandibular condyle is what we call the mandibular notch. And there's that mandibular foramen right there. There are no sinuses inside the mandible. There are no paranasal sinuses, but there are holes for teeth. What do we call those holes for teeth again? Alveoli. Alveoli is plural. Alveolus is singular for that socket that the root of a tooth goes into. All right, so that's not too hard of a bone to understand. So here is the maxilla, right? Infraorbital foramen. Here is the, what, this would be the frontal process of the maxilla because that's articulating with a frontal bone. This is the zygomatic process because what bone is going to be over here? The zygomatic bone. What's a, well, how in everyday language, what would you call the zygomatic bone? That's your cheekbone, right? Your cheekbone right there. Okay. This little pointy thing right here that some cartilage attaches to, that's the anterior nasal spine. And I think that's really all you have to know about the maxilla. Oh, there is something else about the maxilla you have to know, I think. Go ahead.
Are you allowed to put in the cheekbone?
No, because you have to remember it's only a scantron. But in, on the practicum, no, you have to use the correct anatomical language. And guess what else? It's got to be spelled correctly. Okay? And why did we say it has to be spelled correctly? Because it's school. That's right, it's school. Okay. One thing that I didn't mention is this foramen right here. This is called the incisive foramen. Right? So try to find that in the skull in lab. Incisive foramen in the mandible. All right, so the inferior bone of the nasal septum is the vomer. All right, and then here is the ethmoid bone. And you can see here is the sphenoid sinus. Here's the frontal sinus. Okay. I think this pretty much is right on midline. Here's the vomer, here's the ethmoid bone, and then this is just the cartilage that makes up the nose. All right, that's not an actual bone. And here's the nasal bone. Here's that incisive foramen again. This is what? The palatine process of the maxilla because it articulates with the palatine bone, which helps make up the hard palate of the mouth. Okay. Well, you know, I kind of got carried away. Let's see, where am I right here? Oh, you know what? I don't really have much on this. Oh, okay. No, we're fine. We're fine. All right. I think I talked about all this stuff already, pretty much. Lacrimal bone, right? Nasal bone, very, very thin bone right here. All right, the paranasal sinuses. You should probably have on the tip of your tongue how many there are. And in what bones you find them? How many are there? Okay, there's only four. You have some that are bilateral. Don't count them as a different sinus. Okay, but you have four and four different bones. Of course, you got the frontal sinus right here. You have the ethmoid sinuses in the ethmoid bone. You have the sphenoid sinus in the sphenoid. And then also in the maxilla, you have sinuses as well. So you have four, right? So frontal, ethmoid, sphenoid, and maxillary sinuses. So that gives you a feeling for where they are. Yeah, right there. What's in there? It's lymphatic tissue that helps fight infection. Okay? And to some degree, it also air conditions the air that you breathe in, but that's mostly the job of the nasal cavity with the nasal conchae. Okay, so mostly it's lymphatic tissue. And here's just a different aspect of where you can see them. Now here's that hyoid bone that's inserted into the mandible. Kind of looks like the mandible. It actually kind of looks maybe like a neonate mandible. So in lab, make sure that you're not looking at a neonate skull, that it's actually a mandible, because it has these different cornu or horns on it sticking up. And these are just places for muscle attachment. Yeah. And I think we have maybe one skeleton that has that hyoid bone in there. But don't go poking around too much, because you might actually break that thing by palpating too hard. All right, so I don't think I want to move to the vertebral column right away, but let's see if we can recognize some of these bones. Let's see what I got here. What do I got right here? Aha! What bone is that? Okay, that's just a rest station, right? So you don't have to tell me the name of that bone, but you will have to tell me the name of this bone. And I'll go slow the first time through this, okay? But in your mind, try to recognize it as fast as you can. All right, so here is a bone. Oh, I didn't talk about this one yet. That's a vertebrae. Okay? And yeah, this is the first cervical vertebrae. Okay, and we call that the atlas. Okay, that shouldn't be on this quiz. Or maybe I'm going to have to talk about vertebrae first. Oh, let's see what we can do. This wasn't the quiz I was thinking about. Okay. Okay, now what bone is that? That's the occipital bone. And of course, right, the foramen magnum. These are occipital condyles. What's the job of a condyle again? It's for articulation. It's a smooth articulating surface. So this surface here articulates with the first cervical vertebrae, for instance, right here. Okay, so these are the condylar surfaces of that first vertebral vertebrae. All right, now what does this look like? All right, this one right here, what letter does this look like? Okay, it looks like an L. Okay, so that's the palatine bone. Okay, now it's not to scale. It's huge, but in your body, they're actually pretty small. They help make up what? The roof of your mouth. This part right here makes up the posterior part of the hard palate. All right, and then these parts right here, this is what we call the vertical plate. They make the lateral sides of your nasal cavity. So they fit together like this in your mouth. All right, so here's the horizontal plate. Here's the vertical plate. These make the roof of your mouth. These make the lateral walls of your nasal cavity. That's the palatine bone. And at least there's some L's in palatine, maybe for you to help you remember. Okay, palatine bone. All right, this is the second cervical vertebrae because of this bony prominence I see sticking. But I'm going to come back to those later. Yeah, it's your sternum. We didn't talk about that one yet. I got to find the right show, but let's look through these. Ah, what's that one? That's a sphenoid. That's really easy to see. Like, for instance, what are these processes that are sticking down inferiorly? These are the pterygoid process, but don't spell it like you pronounce it, right? It starts with a P, right? Pterygoid process. Here's the body. Here's a greater wing. Here's a lesser wing. And the sella turcica is going to be about in this region right here. All right, so sphenoid bone. Would you be able to recognize that sphenoid bone now? Yeah, probably so. That's another vertebrae. Okay, that's probably I clicked the button right here. Do I see anything right here? Yeah, it probably looks like a little bit of a it is a thoracic, because here's an articulate. We'll talk about why you can recognize it that way in a little bit. What's this one here? Okay, ethmoid bone. Blown way up out of scale, but here are the ethmoid sinuses. Here is the, what bony plate is this? This is the cribriform plate. Cribriform plate with all of the olfactory foramina. And then this is the crista galli, that thing that is sticking up into your cranium, grabbing onto the meninges so your brain doesn't slosh around in there. Okay. Ethmoid bone. And then maxilla. Okay. Like the frontal process right over here. Okay. So that's a lumbar vertebrae. Oh, what's this one again? That is a nice frontal view of the ethmoid bone. Right, perpendicular plate, crista galli, sinuses, and then the mandible, hyoid bone. Sorry, these aren't all to scale, but you know, some of these bones are so small, if they were to scale, you couldn't see them. So, and then this one, I don't think you've got a picture in your mind of where this belongs yet, but this is the vomer. Right, and maybe it's called the vomer means a plowshare. It's something you drag through the ground that makes a furrow to plant seeds in. And you see this little delta-like deviation right here. All right, this is what makes the inferior part of the nasal septum. So here is a lateral view of it, and this is a superior view of it. This makes the inferior part of the nasal septum way down, okay, underneath the ethmoid bone. So it kind of looks just like a blade of a knife. This is the vomer. And some more vertebrae. Sternum. Okay, more vertebrae. Oh, I have too many vertebrae in here. Ah, now this one. All right, you're going to have to look at this one in lab, too. A very prominent feature on your face is your, what bone is very prominent? Okay, is your cheekbone. And what is your cheekbone, really? That's a zygomatic bone, but when you look at it disarticulated, you're going to see, at least for me, it gives me the impression that it's really small. The zygomatic bone is actually pretty small, and that's the zygomatic bone, because here is the orbital margin, okay? And then this is going to reach back to touch the temporal bone, so this is the temporal process of the zygomatic bone. So the zygomatic bone is actually pretty small looking, okay? Another vertebrae, okay, and this one, temporal bone. Did we start here? I don't think so. Mastoid process, styloid process, right? Zygomatic process because it articulates with the zygomatic bone. External auditory meatus. Oh, I should have erased that. This is the squamous region. And then what suture is this right here? Squamous suture. Yeah. Okay. What bone is that? Frontal bone. This is where we started. Okay. All right, so what is today? Wednesday? Yeah, okay. On my website, I have this flash quiz from pictures of actual bones. So maybe over the weekend, you should look at that video and practice naming the disarticulated bones. All right, so you can go take a look at that. Let's see. Yeah, it's on my website. Let me see if I can find it. I'm surprised I didn't have it on here. Can you print these right here? I probably have to put them in the study guide. Ah, what's this here? Oh, I hope this is what I'm looking for. Let's see. What was that? Frontal bone. I don't know if anybody was watching or not. All right, so that was less than a quarter of a second. So if you can recognize that bone in less than a quarter of a second, you're going to be really bored on the practicum, because how many seconds do you have for a practicum? Oh, you got like 90, right? So you got hundreds of times more time than what you've just had on that. But let's go back and take a look. Indeed, is that the frontal bone? And indeed it is. Okay. It was a little fast. Okay. What's this one? Oh, it was way too long, I know. You saw that sphenoid bone? All right, but you could kind of go back and name some things like the pterygoid process, the greater wing, the lesser wing, and the... Okay, that's actually the body, and then right, if you were to look down in here, you'd see the cella turcica. Yeah, the cella turcica. All right, so sphenoid. Let's see what this is. That's a little strange. Okay, that's the parietal bone. It's parietal because I don't see many landmarks on this one right here. That's a parietal bone. Point to where your parietal bone is. Yeah, it's behind. Here's frontal. Parietal is in the back, way over here, right? Bilaterally. Okay. These aren't to scale. Sort of to scale, but not exactly. What was that? Temporal bone. Mandible. Occipital, because you saw the big foramen magnum right there. All right. Maybe we should do it like this on the test in here next time. This is actually kind of fun. Oh, what's that tiny, tiny little bone? That is the lacrimal bone. Okay, the lacrimal bone. I won't even go back to it. That's a disarticulated lacrimal bone. Very tiny and very, very thin. Oh, yeah, ethmoid. Sorry, I was talking. Lacrimal bones are very difficult to keep in lab as a real bone because as soon as you touch it, there are enough salts and acids on your fingertips to dissolve it away, so it just disappears. So even on a real skull, when people touch the lacrimal bone, it does what? It dissolves away. Yeah.
What do you call like a bigger skull of a real
bone? Of a lacrimal?
I mean like a...
Well, it's not my favorite bone. So I just kind of tell you it's there. I don't know of any really important clinical pathologies of the lacrimal bone, but there might be some. I would guess it might have to do with, like, tears or something, right? But not too important. Okay, next. What's an L? What's an L-shaped bone? Palatine, right? So here is the perpendicular plate. Here's the horizontal plate. This makes up the... A hard palate, this makes up the lateral aspects of the nasal cavity, like that, it fits together like that. Palatine bone. All right, and this one. Ah, that's a really funny one. Very prominent bone on your face, but when it's disarticulated, doesn't look very impressive at all. It's your zygomatic bone, right? Zygomatic bone. Right, zygomatic. Okay, zygomatic bone? Okay. All right, what about that one? Oh, I didn't talk about this one very much. This is a nasal conche. This is the inferior nasal conche, which forms a shelf inside your nasal cavity that, what, air conditions the air coming in? All right, and it's just loaded with all kinds of rough surfaces right here. This one. It's blown up really, really big. It makes the bridge of your nose right here. That's the nasal bone. Nasal bone. And you can see that right here is where your nasal cavity is, right here. And the lacrimal bone will be right about here. And then behind that is the ethmoid bone. All right, so bridge of the nose, nasal bone. And that, maxilla. Now this one. I don't know if you've yeah, that's the vomer. It kind of looks like a knife blade, the blade of a knife. Now, where does that fit in? Is that a cranial bone or a facial bone? It's a facial bone. It makes the inferior part of the nasal septum. All right, so you don't really know much about this bone until you take anatomy class because you never look inside somebody's nose, dig around in there, right? And that's where it is. It's right inside the nose. All right, this. Hyoid bone. Don't get tricked to think it's a mandible. It's a hyoid. And frontal. All right, so let's go through them one more time. Now there's a sign-in sheet going around. Who's got the sign-in sheet? Is it in the back row? So if anybody needs to sign the sign-in sheet, it's up over there, so make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. And all right, so you ready? Sphenoid. That's a parietal bone. Parietal bone. Temporal bone. Mandible. Occipital? Lacrimal, a tiny, tiny lacrimal bone. Ethmoid? Palatine, that's a palatine. Zygomatic bone? That's an inferior nasal concha. It's a separate bone all by itself. There are other nasal concha that are actually part of the ethmoid bone. But that one is a bone all by itself. It's a standalone bone. Nasal bone. Maxilla. Vomer. Too fast. Vomer. It's just a blade. Just a really long, thin bone. Okay. And then this one. Hyoid. Frontal. Well, we did all the bones. That's every single bone of the skull. So it's all the cranial bones, all the facial bones. Should we do it one more time? Like in the next minute? Let's do it one more time. Let's see how fast we can do it. Sphenoid. Parietal. Temporal. Mandible. Occipital. Lacrimal. Ethmoid. Palatine, zygomatic, nasal concha, inferior nasal concha, nasal bone, maxilla, vomer, hyoid, frontal. So that's all the bones of the skull. So how do you learn anatomy? Repetition, just a little bit of repetition in there. Okay? Okay. All right, so make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Have a nice weekend.